This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by Primary Residential Mortgage, PRMIseattle.com. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
The stubborn BLM partisans are back at it. They're marching again, this time in the city of Renton, where they're mad at what seems to be a genuine and completely non-offensive mistake. And it's an issue that's being made worse by the very guy who's supposed to be seen as purely the victim. Now, let's be clear. This is a case of mistaken identity. And the guy who was mistaken to be someone else is a victim in that sense, for sure. And also, to be clear, the security guards in this story don't seem to be all that bright. But this guy, the victim, is the only reason this situation devolved into what it did. He believes, he's taught, so many people are taught, that the only reason for someone, for him, to be seen as suspicious is due to his skin color, due to racism. Now, this happened at the Evergreen Building in Renton. They have a whole bunch of different businesses in this location, different offices housing these businesses. And one of them is a spot for troubled youth, and that's where this one guy happens to live. Or work, excuse me. His name is John Houston. So John Houston is walking into this building. He's on his way to work. At that time, little did he know that security had just been warned that there is someone who's dangerous, who's a domestic violence suspect of some sort of crime, trying to get into this building. And they got a description. They know exactly what this guy looks like. He was black, and he used a cane. John, who wasn't the suspect, ended up getting stopped by the security guards. Now, one might say, if you just said a suspicious-looking black male is possibly trying to get into this building and they stopped all the black men, that would be one thing. And that would be a completely different story. But they had that added key detail, something you don't happen to see all that often with people of any color, a cane. So black N has a cane, okay? Guess what John uses to walk around? Any guesses?
Does he use a cane?
He uses a cane. Now, in that circumstance, if you are told that a dangerous suspect is trying to come into the building who is black and has a cane, if you see someone who is black and male and has a cane, you might get a little bit suspicious, and that would be reasonable. That's reasonable. The same way if they said it's a black male who has a bright pink hat on, and you saw someone who's black male and had a bright pink hat on, you're going to say, I'm going to question that person. All these two security guards did was go up to him and ask who he was. That's it. That's at least how the story reports it from Como. They just ask his name. Except he did not want to give his name.
I'm not going to answer that for you because I think you're harassing me.
I'm not going to answer that for you because I think you're harassing me. Como says he wouldn't even explain where he worked in the building, which then kind of makes you even more suspicious, reasonably so. You believe you potentially have a suspect who is a domestic violence criminal. He matches the description, at least physically, that they were told. And he's not even telling you where he works in the building at a time where you're supposed to be on the lookout for the bad guy. That seems reasonable to me. Am I crazy? That one seems completely reasonable.
I mean, you're crazy for a lot of things.
But not this
thing specifically.
Right? But... it seems 100% reasonable. He refuses. Now, this is where I call out the security guards. I don't know one key detail here. It's kind of misleading, or I can't figure it out based on the Como story. Cops end up showing up, and they have a photo, an actual photo of the guy, the suspect. And they look at the photo. They quickly realize that this isn't him. Now, I don't know if the security guards had access to that photo beforehand. I don't know how crystal clear the photo is when compared to this guy. I don't know if by the time they realized, oh, let's check the photo to see if it matches, 911 had already been called. Don't know. But I do know that all of this could have been very easily figured out and de-escalated had the guy just said, oh, no, I'm John. I work upstairs. Here's my card. Here's my key card. Or we can go upstairs if you want. Just ask the person. They know who I am. It could have been solved just like that. But instead, this is an example, yet again, of racial profiling. This is racism in action. And of course, you had BLM activists get together and march. They protested yesterday. And John says he just hopes this becomes a teachable moment. Not for him, even though he right now is the one who clearly needs to be taught a lesson as to maybe not completely going too far in your reaction to what is very clearly reasonable. He wants it to be a lesson for the greater society. Stop profiling people.
I have grandchildren, I have children that if they ever ask me, Grandpa, what did you do? Or Dad, what did you do? I can tell them I stood up. You know, I stood up against the ugliness and the hate.
I mean, you pretended to be a victim and you made a situation unnecessarily tense. That's what you did. You're not a hero. You're not a civil rights fighter. You didn't fight for freedom. You didn't do any of that. You didn't push back against racism. There's actual racism. And yes, there's actual instances of racial profiling. This most certainly was not, based on the details that we have in this report. Not even a little bit. And when we pretend otherwise, all we do is kind of a version of what John did, which is make situations more tense than they need to be. We're doing, society is doing, BLM is doing exactly what John did when he refused to answer a simple question under a reasonable circumstance from the security officer's perspective. Could this have gone a completely different way and actually leaned into racial profiling? Absolutely. 100% it could have. There's no evidence that that actually happened. But we live in a society that pretends this stuff happens all the time. And the second that you have any interaction with a police officer, of course it must be due to the color of your skin or your religion or your perceived gender, whatever it happens to be. We are teaching people that message. What does that do? It creates dangerous situations for cops and for members of the public in the future, because the next time a cop goes up to someone and asks them an innocent question, well, in the back of their minds, they're going to say, well, I was taught, I was told, I was promised that this was going to happen, and it's only because I happen to be black or Muslim or transgender or whatever it happens to be. And that changes the tone of your voice and your body language when you're having an interaction with that cop, and they sense it. Because every time they go into a situation, officers have to be a little bit on edge because they understand that, generally speaking, the people they deal with every single day are threats. Threats to them, threats to others around them. And when they pick up on that tension, when they're just saying, hey, how's your day going today, sir? And all of a sudden you're super tense. They think you're tense, not because you were taught some racist drivel or bigoted drivel about how cops are, but because you might be a bad guy. And then you lean into that more. You give them more of a reason to suspect that you did something. It doesn't justify a cop just randomly doing something as a result of just a bad feeling, obviously. But it does mean that sometimes you're sending off the wrong messages and you don't need to. And instead of addressing this issue, instead of being fair about it, instead of being honest about it and trying to build bridges between the black community or the Latino community, the Muslim community, whatever community, and cops, we are purposely trying to separate the two, make it worse. Because only then can progressives dismantle the system of oppression and then rebuild it in their image. They weren't able to do it in Minneapolis. They would love to do it in Renton. Think Renton is immune to some of this nonsense? You are not. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. I'd love to get your take. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
Well, this is a weird story, and I'm willing to bet there are more details here than the city, or really in this case, the district, would have you know. Seattle Public Schools made the announcement today, and it came out maybe 2 hours ago because someone very angrily responded and forwarded me the email filled with cuss words about these teachers, and really it's staff. They announced that classes will be canceled on Friday, all of them. What's on Friday? What's on Thursday?
Veterans Day.
Okay. So not Friday. Okay. Why would they close it on Friday? Any ideas?
Because Fridays, nobody should work on Fridays. Right.
That is a fair point. That's not the answer, but that is a fair point. Yeah, that's fair. No, it's because they don't have enough staff.
Oh.
That's kind of weird. The email was sent out earlier today. It said that it was, quote, aware of an unusually large number of SPS staff taking leave on Friday. And it goes on to say that it does not believe we have adequate personnel to open schools with the necessary environment for high-quality learning. So now they're canceling the class. They're now moving the missed day into the 2021-2022 school calendar so they can make sure they hit the number of required hours for students in order to graduate. So the students get effectively punished here because some teachers and other staff decided to take Friday off because we have a holiday in the middle of the week, tail end of the week, and they just wanted a four-day weekend.
It's SPS.
Heroes, by the way.
Aren't students being punished every day for being in that district?
Yeah, but now they're getting an extra day of punishment.
I know, but it's just constant
punishment. So the heroes decided to take a four-day week because they all wanted it, and I guess schools couldn't be all like, yeah, no, I'm you got Thursday off. I mean, could you reconsider Friday? Because if too many of you take it off, we're going to have to cancel school. So that's just kind of odd to me. Now, I pick on teachers here because I don't like teachers anymore. Because of bad experience in fourth grade. But I'm assuming it's not just teachers. It's other staff members and administrators as well. It can't be just teachers. There's just no way.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, it's janitorial and admin, faculty, everyone.
Principal.
Lunch ladies, lunch men.
Yeah, don't say lunch lady.
What cafeteria worker?
Lunch people.
Lunch people?
No, excuse me.
Lunch
people
X?
Experiencing... serving lunch.
Don't act like Lunch X isn't better than that.
Lunch X?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Come on. That's a good one.
Lunch X.
You can use that in your next blog when you write about this.
Yeah, I can't wait to drop that comedy gold. Why don't you leave the comedy writing to the professional? I don't text you when I need my jokes punched up, do I? Do I?
No. Just, okay.
Who do I sometimes text for dad jokes? Who do you think I text? I'll give you a hint. It's my former producer.
Tom?
Nope.
You text Tom?
Tom's not funny.
I know Tom's not
funny. Not intentionally,
funny.
At least.
Darren?
Nope.
Jacob?
Yep.
You think Jacob's funny?
I said dad jokes.
You think Jacob's funnier
nope.
than me?
Oh, well, yeah, because you're not funny. I'm saying I ask him for punch-ups with dad jokes that are intentionally bad, and then I function around them to make them good.
I can't believe Jacob writes your jokes. He writes your material.
Yeah, you know what part of the thing is? And sometimes he's not listening. He's doing another show because I'm a bad person. He is a hardcore progressive.
Massive.
Like, oh my gosh, hardcore.
Rides a bike to work every single day.
Yeah, because he doesn't want to hurt the environment. I will sometimes ask him to punch up a joke that I just kind of just came up with on the way to Fox, knowing that he hates himself for coming up with some quality material to be used on a conservative network. I don't even use it. Sometimes it's just random. It's not even on a topic I'm talking about.
You just do that so he goes to bed knowing that he
yes.
just punched on his own side?
Yes, to just like crush what's remaining of his soul after having worked for me.
I was going
to
say, he worked for you for a long time. There's not much soul left.
There isn't, and I'm trying to take it all away.
You don't think John's doing a good enough job at that?
No. John's nice, at least. I'm horrible to people.
Yeah, you are.
Just horrible.
I can vouch for that.
And so I keep having him just punch up material that's not even real. Knowing he hates himself every day because I did that. Does that mean...
I love that, actually.
You realize what I'm doing to you and you don't even realize. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The environment.
I am an environmentalist. I don't hide that, but I'm not an environmentalist by the left standard because I don't want to destroy capitalism. And that's really what has become of this environmentalist movement. At one point, it was being pushed forward by crazy earth people. They love to go outside without shoes and be one with nature. And they were always kind of creepy, but they were relatively harmless, except for the ones who might kill someone if you looked at a tree wrong. Those people ended up going to jail and or a mental health institute. But the environmentalist movement as we know it right now has been overtaken by progressives who don't care all that much about the environment. They only care about the environment as in as much as they can exploit it for political gain, to promote some sort of social justice agenda. And that is something I can't get behind. Now, I am involved as an advisor, an evergreen advisor for the American Conservation Coalition, the ACC. My position on the environment is I want to protect the environment, not to hurt capitalism, but to make capitalism and the environment both thrive. Right now, you've got the climate UN meeting out in the UK, in Glasgow. And a whole bunch of the socialists have shown up because they use this as a way to scare people into their agenda. And one guy was at one of the protests and he said the crazy things you'd expect him to say.
Capitalism is ruining the planet. We see that the governments, they don't find solutions, although all the solutions are existing. They just keep killing the planet. And we are socialists. I'm a socialist. We are socialists.
And now we picked it up from the scent, the whole not wearing any, you know, I mean, let's just deodorant. You didn't brush your teeth this morning. You're also wearing a hat that says socialist, so I'm in, and then the shirt that says I'm with Bernie. So, we picked it up.
I want to change the system. I'm Polish, and I not only see what is happening, like, with, you know, the carbon situation in Poland, but also the whole system, what is happening in my country is terrible. So I'm here to fight against them.
The problem is capitalism, because this particular economic system that provides massive wealth inequality and that destroys the environment.
Oh, okay. Capitalism is doing this. So it's not really man-made climate change anymore. It's capitalism-induced climate change. People like that make me want nothing to do with the environmentalist movement. And I would argue that if we had less of those people, less of that influence, the environmentalist movement would look completely different. I'm all about protecting the environment with better technology, clean energy that actually works. Nuclear energy works, but no one wants to invest in that because they're scared after something happened in another country with the utilization of third world technology. It had nothing to do with the dangers of nuclear waste and nuclear power. Then you've got people like Nancy Pelosi out there cramming in as many progressive buzzwords as possible into pitching a Build Back Better plan using the environmentalist take.
But we're here today to report on what we have done.
Okay.
This is a nearly $1 trillion investment in Build Back Better and bipartisan infrastructure framework. Okay. Recognizes the interconnectedness of climate change and gender justice.
Wait, what?
And enables women and girls to lead a just transition to a clean energy economy of the future.
So only girls can enjoy the environment? Is that what she just said? I don't know. What did she just say? What did she say?
She gendered it.
What did she say? What did she just say?
Do you think anybody can keep up with Nancy Pelosi?
Real quick, because I know that we have to go to a break. Hold on. What does this mean?
Gender justice.
Wait.
And in New York, recognizes the interconnectedness of climate change and gender justice.
Do girls sweat more when it's hot out? I thought that was a dude thing. Is it just the women?
I mean, I sweat all the time, so.
You're generally unhealthy, but yeah, what she just said doesn't mean anything. And it makes me not want to have anything to do with environmentalism. And I say that as an environmentalist. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text.
Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. I mean, it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore stories that are coming out of Seattle, and instead, we focus all of our attention on the communities you live in, the communities you care about most. And we start this hour in Snohomish County, but I'm kind of focusing a little bit on the folks living in Everett. You know, we don't say this very often, so, you know, I thought I'd throw this out there. Bad policies of Seattle have a tendency to spread.
Yeah, that's a new one. You should probably start using that one.
I feel
more.
Like that's a good one to brand this segment with. And this is another perfect example of what I mean by that. The Snohomish County Council is now searching for a hotel in the city of Everett to house some of the local homeless population. Until, of course, this plan expands and word gets out. And then some more homeless people will go from the neighboring cities. Maybe they'll head on over from Snohomish or Monroe. Maybe they'll even say, you know what, I'm over here in Edmonds. It's kind of like it here. I'll head on over there. Maybe someone in King County will say, you know what, I could, of course, go to Seattle, but there's a whole bunch of other people. I'm going to go head over to Everett. Now, they don't have a property in mind yet. They know what they want to purchase, a room, 125 rooms in a hotel. And the county council just gave them the thumbs up to go ahead and start looking. Tell us what options are out there and we'll figure out whether or not it makes sense to purchase. Now, the vote was 4-1. The no vote came from Councilmember Sam Lowe. And he spoke to the Everett Herald. And he said something that I firmly support. I think most people would. I don't think the county should be in the hotel business. He said, I think the community should have a voice before the county comes in and starts buying hotels in their city. That's the bottom line. If the city wants to send off a letter through the council or mayor saying, we want this, that's a voice. And he's 100% correct. We just had this conversation in the city of Redmond, where they were completely shocked, the people who live there, to find out that the mayor had just said, oh, yeah, hey, King County Executive Dale Constantine, go ahead, put your hotel here for the homeless. Low barrier, whatever, we don't care. I don't need any of the specifics. And people who live in the community were like, wait a minute, this is outrageous. What about us? What about the impact it's going to have on this community? They didn't care over in the mayor's office or in the executive office. And that's what's going to happen here. His point, Sam Lowe's point, is perfectly made. In fact, it's made by this statement. So they write, Everett city officials are aware of the county's plan. City spokesperson Julio Cortez said Monday afternoon, quote, we're very encouraged by the county's willingness to use some of its resources to respond to the homeless crisis that continues to persist in our community. The mayor has been working closely with the executive office as well as other jurisdictions to discuss utilizing the funds and other federal resources to address these important issues. Did they talk to the folks who live in Everett? No. No. They didn't actually get a say. They didn't get a say. And maybe you think this is fine. There's some people always like to say, oh, no, it's cool, until it opens right next door to them. And then all of a sudden, maybe they realized, oh, there's some unintended consequences here. Like, there's a tendency around these places for crime to go up, and I didn't want any more crime in my neighborhood. Well, you just got it. You will get it. And at the end of the day, the reason why I push back against this nonsense so much is because they almost never, at least in King County, these programs almost never come with any rules, meaningful rules, keeping people accountable. Saying that if you're homeless because you are using drugs, well, guess what? We're putting you in treatment, and no, you do not get to take drugs here. You don't get to use in your private suite because we're not giving this to you forever or until you die from an overdose. We're giving this to you to get your life back in order so that you're no longer living out on the streets. And the reason why an addict who's homeless is because of that addiction. And if you don't treat it and you wait for them to be ready, quote unquote, you wait for them to gain their trust, and all of a sudden they'll start to listen to you. Yeah, you know, the work can take years and years and years, but you know what? It's really worth it. The work can't take years and years and years. We have too many homeless people. We have too many homeless people. And we have a drug culture in the state that's leading to more addiction, which then will lead to more homelessness and more death. The program we talked about yesterday in Ording, one of the guys who went through a tiny home village, he's a veteran, army vet, been living homeless for a very long time. He said, the community stepped up and helped to keep me sober. He was dealing with alcoholism, and that's what he put blame on as for the homelessness he was experiencing, that life he was experiencing. But the community has helped kept him sober for, what was it, 8 or 9 months? And all of a sudden, he's got hope. All of a sudden, family members he never spoke to or hasn't spoken to for years because presumably the way he treated them, all of a sudden they're opening up again. His life is going to be better as a result of a community and a program that kept him accountable. And so whenever I see, hey, we're going to follow the lead of King County, well, that might also mean they follow the lead of the programs that have no rules that are enforced. Meanwhile, we're now hearing from the Federal Way officer, Donovan Heavener. He was shot in Puyallup last week during a jog. He was out on a jog. He came upon a burglary that was happening. And they ended up spotting him and they ended up shooting him. He spoke with Q13.
I just saw the two guys putting a strap on the door. And I knew what they were up to, so I just tried to stay out of sight and call 911.
Now, he says that the robbers saw him. Despite trying to stay out of sight, they approached him.
But they saw me, and that's when they hopped in their trucks and took off. One guy went across the street and got out of his truck. I couldn't see what he was doing, and then that's when I felt the pain in my stomach.
That pain in his stomach was a bullet wound fired by one of the suspects. They shot him. Obviously, he had his phone on him. He knows at that point he's been seriously injured. But he said it was actually a challenge to connect with 911 and actually communicate because he couldn't breathe.
It was hard for me to breathe. Just trying to let him know where I was at, what was going on. I knew I had to get out into the middle of River Road to try to get someone in traffic to stop in order to help me.
But ACAB, right? This is a guy who didn't need to stop. This is a guy who didn't need to get involved whatsoever. This is a cop who was jogging in a city that he doesn't actually work for. And as a result of his heroism, doing the right thing, doing something he didn't have to but chose to, putting himself in danger, he gets called all sorts of names by folks on the left. Now, he says he finds it a little bit confusing that people are praising his actions.
People have used the term hero, which I don't understand. I mean, I didn't do anything heroic. I did what I was supposed to do.
Except you did do something heroic, and a lot of people wouldn't have done that. There are few professions that give way to heroism every day. And you've got the standard stuff, right? They throw it out there, teachers, nurses, talk show hosts, but cops do this every single day. They put themselves in positions where they can be heroic or they could cower. And almost every single one of them chooses the heroics. And yet they get called out. So I'd rather be called a hero than a bastard. And he is feeling really good right now, knowing that the community has had his back.
We hear a lot of the hate that goes on towards law enforcement. And to get the support from the community that I've gotten is reassuring.
And you can hear that in his voice. He's almost breaking up. He almost wants to cry. He's emotional, understandably so. Because I know a lot of cops, despite realizing that the vast majority of people actually support them and it's just a small group of fringe lunatics who are calling them out and attacking them and wishing upon them death, they don't often hear that. They hear the loud voices, small in numbers, loud in voice. They hear that. They don't hear the rest of us. And for him, it took a shooting to the stomach for him to realize that, or for it to really hit home. Now, as you recall, when this shooting actually happened last Sunday, police chiefs of Puyallup and Federal Way, they both said that the injuries were life-threatening. So thankfully, that was not the case in the end. In fact, he goes on to credit first responders from Puyallup Police and the Pierce County Fire Department, the doctors, the nurses who actually treated him. Except then he... I will pick on him for a moment, because then right after in the story of Q13, he thanks the first responders and everything. This is what he says.
I was fortunate. I really lucked out. I think that's part of the reason why I'm recovering so well.
So it wasn't the nurses and the doctors and the fire department? It was luck?
Luck, man. Better than medicine sometimes, right?
So luck's the true hero.
Yeah, he thanks luck.
Not to pick on him. I thought that was kind of funny. At least a phrasing there. I want to thank the people who saved my life. The nurses, the doctors, Puyallup Police, and the firefighters. But I really just lucked out. It had nothing to do with them. I just got lucky. Come on.
You're picking on...
I've earned enough street cred within the law enforcement community to have a little bit of a joke.
Say it to his face then.
Okay, book him.
Okay.
I'll give him a hard time.
We'll talk to him.
Good for him. True hero. And this is what cops do. This is what cops do. And yet the entire profession is defined by less than a fraction of a percent of the bad cops. You don't do that with doctors or nurses. You don't do that with teachers. You only do it with cops because the left hates cops. That's why we love cops on this show, because we're not the left. It's the Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. The whole situation with the Christopher Steele dossier is just imploding. Everyone knew this was going to happen. We knew this was an inevitability. We knew that it was a lie. The Democrats who put it out there pushed this. The media outlets that didn't bother to do any fact-checking, they all kind of knew it was a lie. Some literally knew it was a lie. But they did it anyway. They used it anyway because they hated Donald Trump and they wanted to hurt him. They wanted to stop him from becoming president, and they wanted to destroy his presidency once he won. You'll recall back in 2017, Rachel Maddow did that whole big deep dive, a full hour into this dossier, and she claimed at the time that the dossier came from Steele's, quote, deep cover sources inside Russia, except they didn't exist. CNN, MSNBC, I think BuzzFeed did something, the McClatchy newspapers, Mother Jones. They treated this dossier and the claims in there, including the urine tape, they treated it as facts and they had no corroboration at all. Now, we're awaiting the results of the special counsel investigation by John Durham. It's taking a long time, these things tend to, and it kind of sounds like this is coming to the tail end, where we're going to expect some sort of announcement. We had documents that were uncovered recently, or released recently, I should say, that tell us a whole lot more about what he's looking at and where it potentially could lead. He's trying to find out where this Russian collusion scam started. And it appears it's between Steele, a Russian national who provided all of these lies. His name is Igor Danchenko. But also the Clinton camp. Now, we already knew, obviously, that the Clintons were involved, the DNC was involved, but Fox News says the indictment of Danchenko states that he was a main source for the dossier and that he lied to the FBI by claiming that he never discussed allegations made in the dossier with an individual identified in court documents only as PR Executive 1. Well, it turns out that executive has been identified as Chuck Dolan. Chuck Dolan, who's that? Oh, he's someone who has some really close, deep ties to the Clintons. He was a state chairman for Bill Clinton's 92 and 96 presidential campaigns. Clinton appointed him to serve on an advisory commission in the State Department. Then he became an advisor for Hillary Clinton's 2008 campaign. And then, according to this indictment, he, quote, actively campaigned and participated in calls and events as a volunteer on behalf of Hillary Clinton. And that was back in 2016. Who stood to benefit the most from the dossier? Oh, yeah, Hillary Clinton. Who apparently is tied to this scam dossier. Oh, Hillary Clinton, close connection. That's so weird. And, of course, you had all of the bad faith politicians on the left going out there and using this, pretending that it was legitimate. You had Eric Swalwell in between swiping right on Chinese spies. He was out there all the time. You had the worst of the worst in Adam Schiff going on television show after show after show after show after show. Took a quick break. He took a nap in the CNN green room next to Avenatti. And then he would go back on and talk again and again and again about something he knew was nonsense. And today on The View, despite his effort to try to squirm his way out of it, he got called out by the former State Department spokeswoman, Morgan Ortegas, who was one of the fill-in hosts.
You may have spread Russian disinformation yourself for years by promoting this. I think that's what Republicans and what people who entrusted you as the Intel Committee chair are so confused about your culpability in all of this.
Well, I completely disagree with your premise. It's one thing to say allegations should be investigated, and they were.
Well, hold on. You didn't say that they should be investigated. You said that this was a fact. You pretended as if the investigation had already concluded that Trump had colluded with Russia. You guys are still claiming that.
It's another to say that we should have foreseen in advance that some people were lying to Christopher Steele, which is impossible, of course, to do.
Oh, well, of course.
But let's not use that as a smokescreen to somehow shield Donald Trump's culpability for inviting Russia to help them in the election, which they did.
Of course, a offhanded joke about, hey, if you're looking at emails, why don't you go look at it? Yeah, okay. Yeah, that was very clearly his attempt to get Russians involved, even though, according to the dossier, it was deep cover Russians who were trying to hurt Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. For trying to coerce Ukraine into helping him in the next election, which he did, into inciting an insurrection.
Did you hear that? I mean, I know he's talking about Bill Clinton, and that just brings up some things. Did you hear that?
Into inciting an insurrection, which he...
You heard that? Were you trying to drown out the erection comment?
I mean...
You heard that, right?
Yeah, I heard that.
Okay. He did. None of that is undercut. None of that serious misconduct is in any way diminished by the fact that people lied to Christopher Steele.
No, I think just your credibility is.
Well, I think the credibility of your question is in doubt.
Oh, he flustered there. First he said erection by accident, and then he didn't know how to respond. Oh, poor Adam Schiff. Don't give me that look. That was funny. 1-800-465.
You can make fun of Adam Schiff.
8770 if you want to send me a text. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.